I will warn you, I was on retreat this week, and I've noticed something about what happens when I go on retreat, and it's a particularly good retreat. The weekend after, I tend to preach really long. Hesitant prophets. Elisha was the one chosen to carry on the prophetic ministry of Elijah. And not that he doesn't want to do it. It's kind of like, I'll do it, but I've got some things to finish. What was he doing when Elijah comes by? He was doing his daily work, plowing the field, following the oxen, tilling the soil. And the prophet came and covered him with his mantle, his cloak. An invitation to follow, an invitation to a ministry that would not be an easy one. The true prophets were never universally accepted or revered. Often they were maligned, separated out from the community because all too often their words were seen as a little too harsh. I find it quite telling how Elijah responds to Elisha's hesitancy. Did you pick it up? He walks away. He walks away and waits for Elisha to follow him, to pursue him. And it's really the saying, I'll do it, but I've got a few things to finish here. I've got a field to plow, a family to say goodbye to. And it's almost like Elijah says, no, take care of your life. I got to go. Can you think of a more extreme response than right there? He slaughters the oxen. He takes as the kindling for his fire, the very plows that he was manning, boils their flesh, feeds the people, and off he goes to begin his life and ministry as a prophet. An initial hesitancy to what one could argue would be the most radical and extreme yes that anyone has ever experienced. Have we ever considered that God does the same thing to us, sneaks up on us in unsuspecting moments and says, come after me, follow me, walk with me, speak for me? And do we ever find ourselves being a little hesitant? It happens all the time. When people in the church or leaders of the church are looking people to step up to make sure that a ministry moves forward, and they say, who will volunteer? Who will answer the call? Do we ever find ourselves in that initial hesitation? It's almost like if you have 100 people, 99 will step back hoping that the one gets called. Not me, not now, not today. We all know the famous words of Augustine, right? Augustine knew that God was calling him to a life of holiness, a life of sanctity, a life of purity. He had heard the preaching of St. Ambrose of Milan, and it stirred him. It moved him. The Spirit was prodding him. Augustine got there, but you remember what his initial response was? Lord, I'm ready. Make me chaste. Just not yet. Just not yet. Just not today. One more round, one more experience, one more self-indulgence. Then maybe I'll be ready. Jesus ran into the same thing in the gospel today. He's going after one after another, and he's saying, follow me, follow me, follow me. Let me take care of my family first. Let me say goodbye first. Let me do this first, that first, the other. We want to accomplish our to-do lists, our wish list, our things that we hold most important. And what does that say? What I want is a little more important than what God calls me to. And we'd never be so bold, would we, to say, it's a whole lot more important. But in our actions, in our values, in our priorities, I'm a little more important. You know, this past week was not a surprise when the Supreme Court decision overturning Roe versus Wade came down. Certainly, we had a hint with the leaked opinion that had gone out. But no one really knew exactly for sure, but everyone was getting ready. Some calling for a night of rage if it didn't go their way. Others bracing for what it might mean to live in a post-Roe America. I'll confess, on the one hand, I was so elated to hear that almost 50 years later, it took us to overturn Roe versus Wade, and at least open the door to recover the right to life of preborn children in their mother's womb. On the other side, though, I knew there'd be a cost for us. As priests, ministers of the gospel, as Catholics, that we were going to have to step up. That this is going to be a challenge to us. Because 50 years after Roe versus Wade, our country speaks a very different language, doesn't it? Roe was controversial when it first came out. It wasn't universally embraced or accepted. There was a lot of pushback. And there are many people who were manning those protests, those peaceful protests, those marches on Washington, trying all they could do to prick the conscience of a nation, to continue to speak for those who didn't have a voice. But I'll tell you pragmatically, and I've been to a number of those marches, I never thought that I would see the day. But now that we see the day, dear friends, it's a call, it's a challenge for us to not just talk about it, but to step into the breach. We also have to recognize in the state that we live in that little will change legislatively because of this, except that we may become a destination for people seeking abortions from other states. So how do you and I respond to this? It can't be with calling down fire from heaven, although you have to admire the gusto of James and John, right? Jesus, they offended you. You want us to call fire down from heaven as if they could? And he's like, no. And I think that says something to us. It's not about responding with wrath, responding with judgment, responding with fire. It's about responding with mercy and compassion, to still recognize people who are hurting, who find themselves painted into corners, who find themselves in the midst of a culture that tells them they can't get through this, they shouldn't get through this, that life is expendable, that it's their right. My friends, for us, it means we have to step in there and say, we'll walk with you, we'll support you, we'll help you, that we'll stand up to make adoption a real choice that people can choose, that keeping their baby becomes a real choice that they can have because they're not going to be doing it alone. And we can't step back and say, okay, we've brought the baby to life, our job is done. What does the old African proverb tell us? It takes a village to raise a child. In other words, we need to be supporters of women and their children, of families and their children. We need to be supporters and promoters of dads who step up and are present to their children. We need to be people who are there, that when people slip and fall, that we don't step over them, step on them, step around them, but rather we're picking them up and empowering them. But so often it's easier to take the easy route. This is not original, but it was a great insight that I learned on retreat this week. We all remember the Irish potato famine in the 1840s. We all remember that. Not that anybody lived through it, but historically we know about the potato famine in Ireland in the 1840s. That really was the beginning of a lot of immigration from Ireland to the United States. You look at it, it was really senseless. It was artificial because there was no shortage of food. It was just that the people who controlled the food sold it to the highest bidder, meaning they exported the meat from the sheep and so forth. And so people were starving. The British government said, no problem, we will help you. They set up soup lines. And they told the people, come, we will feed you. Remember, this was 1840. A lot of tension between Protestants and Catholics at the time. Come, bring your children. Take some soup. But we want something. You send your children to the Protestant catechist. You leave your faith and you embrace another. There was an expression of those who refused would look down on those who did, and they'd say, he took the soup. He took the soup. And you know what? Many moms and dads would probably do the same if their children were starving. They were put into an impossible situation, an impossible choice. But, our friends, we have to ask ourselves,
How often do we take the soup? Compromise our values to not have to engage, to not have to speak up, to delay, or God forbid, not answer at all the call that God has for us. Elisha is a great example for us of the hesitant prophet. He wasn't the only one. Jeremiah had a ton of excuses. But I can't help but think that a lot of the excuses that they would have had or harbored in the back of their mind was, if I do this, I'm not going to be understood. I'm not going to be accepted. I'm not going to be embraced. You ever find yourself tempted to just take the soup? To take the easy way? The way that doesn't seem to be like there's too many hills to climb? The one where you can just kind of coast along? The hesitant prophets, the ones who stay in a state of hesitancy, they're the ones who take the soup. Their needs are met. And that's what counts. The lives that Jesus are calling us to, as a prophetic church, it's not take the easy way. To not look for what's going to benefit us, what's going to cause us the least pain, the least inconvenience. But to live prophetic lives, to be prophetic voices. It doesn't mean that we have to be raging lunatics. Don't get me wrong. Jesus told them, don't call down the fire from heaven. But as people who are baptized into Christ, baptized not just into his life, but into his death, it's going to necessitate that we die to ourselves a little bit. At least every so often, isn't it? And it might mean that we hunger a little bit. Maybe we hunger for validation. Maybe we hunger for attention. Maybe we hunger for acceptance. But the prophet that responds to the call of God occasionally will find themselves standing alone, or with a small band of other prophets. And sometimes people will look at them, look at you, and say that you're insane, that you're crazy, that you're out of touch. But there are other potential, albeit hesitant, prophets, that will be the impetus to give them that ounce of courage that they need to step up, receive the mantle, slaughter the oxen, chop up the plow, boil the flesh, feed the village, and answer the call. We can't just take the soup. We need to answer the call. Amen.